Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Monday, April 29th. Today, Sun reporter Tracy Ross checks in with updates on how the wolf reintroduction in the state has been going and the latest developments in northern Colorado. Before we begin, we're excited to introduce Pine Melon, Denver and Boulder's community grocery app. Get fresh, locally sourced foods delivered to your door at fair prices. Enjoy the convenience of farm-to-table groceries at home. Free same-day delivery saves you time while supporting local producers. Use promo code ColoradoSun for $50 off your first order. Now let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In 1922, following the devastating Pueblo flood, Colorado legislators approved a historic compromise combining flood control funding for the Arkansas River Valley with support for the Moffett Tunnel. This legislative package, hailed by Governor Oliver Shoup as transformative for the state, resulted in the construction of the Moffett Tunnel, which facilitated year-round rail access west of Denver across the Continental Divide. The tunnel was part of a dual-purpose project that also pumped water from the western slope to help Denver sate its thirst. Before we continue, nominations are open for Colorado's Best 2024. As Colorado Sun listeners, we want you to select your favorite businesses, organizations, individuals, and nonprofits across the state. Nominate today by visiting coloradosun.com/colorados-best. Nominations close May 22nd. Now our feature story.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to The Sun Up today. I'm David Krause, one of the editors here at The Sun, and I'm happy to be here with my friend and Sun reporter Tracy Ross, who covers rural issues around the state for us. Hey there, Tracy Ross.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Doing great, thanks. Hey, I enjoyed your Friday episode, but I thought today, since you were hosting Friday, I'm going to be drilling you with some questions. Thought we could just kind of review and catch people up on, I don't know if what contentious is the right word, Tracy, but what's going on with wolves in Colorado right now. You know, just a quick background, 10 wolves are introduced in December in the northern part of the state after state voters in Prop 114 back in 2020 said Colorado should bring back wolves. It barely passed, but still passed. Tracy, you have been watching it quite a bit for the last few months, and it seemed like it was a bit of a rocky start, then quiet for a few months until last week, right? So tell us about some of these latest developments that you've been following and reported on, Trace.
Well, I think contentious is a great word. I also think it's putting it lightly, especially for the people who are most impacted by the wolves being reintroduced here. That's the ranchers who live in the counties who did not vote for them to come. But yeah, I think you're right. Like it struck me definitely that when they were released, it was a big deal. Nobody knew where they were going to go. And then it has been really quiet, except for, of course, the stuff going on in Moffett and Jackson County, but that's not even really the wolves that we're talking about here. Those are wolves that came from Wyoming. But yeah, even just the other day, I was like, wow, what is happening? Like all of the wolves, they're just like staying really far away and eating a bunch of deer and elk. I mean, did they not key in to the fact that there's cows around? And then all of a sudden, between April 2nd and April 16th, sure enough, there were two wolves who killed five cows in Grand County. And then the other two wolves that have been, you know, getting a lot of action, the ones from Wyoming, injured one and killed one in Jackson County. And man, did the ranchers in those areas stand up and demand that CPW do something about these wolves. And by that, I mean kill them. So that was the big news at the beginning of the week. And then also at the beginning of the week on Monday, the North Park Stock Growers Association and the Middle Park Stock Growers Association sent letters to Governor Polis, to the CPW Commission on which there are all kinds of really important people, including the commissioner of the Colorado Agriculture Department, Kate Greenberg. And they said, this has to end. You got to give us a definition of chronic depredation, which is a rule that would allow ranchers to lethally control, i.e. kill wolves that have been killing their cattle, and to come out and take care of these wolves, i.e. kill them, to protect our livestock. So that happened. Then they sent another letter. They didn't get a response, and they sent another letter on Wednesday, and we reported on that. And then I was really wondering, I think everyone else was, you know, if and when CPW was going to respond, and they did. And I think it was late Wednesday night. I'm kind of messing the dates up. CPW director did send a letter to both of those associations, and it was packed with some really interesting information.
So, Tracy, you, like I mentioned earlier, you've been covering this for a few months now. You've talked to ranchers who have been affected. Are you surprised that Colorado Parks and Wildlife hasn't put out rules really for how to handle wolves that are attacking and killing livestock? I mean, I know we have a fund set up to reimburse ranchers, and certainly there's debate about, well, does that really, you know, cover the sum of all the work that goes into raising livestock? But are you surprised that we haven't seen rules on how to handle these wolves yet?
I'm really not surprised, because it's government and everything takes so long to get all the various approvals and to get all the various items lined up that need to be lined up to go forward with something like this. When I say stuff like that, I think the ranching community thinks that we at the Sun are kind of being too easy on CPW. In fact, I saw a response like that just yesterday, and I don't think so. I think, you know, they are faced with this very enormous task, and they did actually address this issue in the 10J rule that they had to get in place before the wolves were reintroduced. And, you know, I think it kind of like left them time and space to figure stuff out instead of making big decisions really quickly. Now, I know that that doesn't satisfy the ranchers at all, and I understand too where they're coming from, because they are losing cattle, and I think a lot of people think that cattle to them is just money. But from the ones I've talked to, I do think that they have a relationship with these animals, and every time a wolf kills one, you know, it doesn't feel good, and they have the added stress of having to be out there and be very hyper vigilant all the time over these animals. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, you know, as somebody who's watched government process, and I've said this on the podcast before, you know, I have friends who work at various levels of government, from city to county to state to federal, and there is that feeling of, you know, there's the definition of slow, but then there's government slow, right? Kind of what you hit on. I was surprised, given the fact that they had so much lead up time to do this, that they didn't have rules in place as soon as they let the wolves out. But I can also see your point of, well, we got to let things play out and see, but you got to know, to me, as somebody who appreciates having the wolves back, but trying to manage them, of, okay, well, why didn't we have rules to begin with in the first place? And Tracy, what is the response from CPW about that? You know, they had 3 years from the time it was voted on to the time they released them. What's the thought process there, a little bit more deeply on CPW holding off on putting rules into place on depredation?
I feel like, I don't think we've gotten like a deep, insightful answer on that. I think the answer that we've gotten is, we're still looking into it. And I know that, you know, some of the reporting and stuff that I've heard is that they wanted to look and see what the other states have done around this issue. And it's interesting to me that Davis worked in Washington, you know, for their wildlife, parks and wildlife people in Washington for 23 years. They have wolves. They have to deal with this. And so it is kind of interesting that it is taking all of this kind of studying of other states and seeing what they're doing to decide what we're going to do. But I do think in the letter that he sent back to ranchers, and ranchers, you know, did confirm this. I talked to somebody from the North Park Stockgrowers Association, and he said, you know, we're really disappointed with the response because CPW said, you know, flat out, we're not going to kill those wolves. But he said, we're also, I can't remember the word he used exactly, but like a little bit, maybe encouraged is too strong a word, but he felt that this was the most information they had gotten out of Davis through the entire process. He said, you know, this feels like it's a little more information that we've gotten before. And maybe he didn't say this outright, but maybe it was like, okay, maybe we're taking like a teeny step in a direction of better communication.
And Tracy, just for our listeners, when you're talking about Davis, you're talking about Colorado Parks and Wildlife Director Jeff Davis. Now, with the other kind of interesting news that you followed and picked up on was that one of the wolves who is documented to have killed cattle, CPW doesn't want to do anything with it because it is mating or has mated with a wolf that is now, they think, pregnant with pups. Tracy, what's the kind of the insight there?
Yeah, so they didn't come out and say that. They didn't say, you know, this wolf is definitely pregnant. But they, you know, through the different pings that come off of their collars, this wolf apparently stopped transmitting for a little while. And that's when they think that she was denning, maybe, or, you know, they linked it to reproduction. And that's kind of as far as they would go. They didn't, you know, come flat out and say, like, she's definitely pregnant. She's going to have puppies in this amount of time. But that was definitely a consideration for them in killing this wolf. Just saying that, you know, essentially that wouldn't be the kind of humane thing to do if this other wolf is going to have puppies. Because they also didn't say this, but if you know anything about wolves, the family structure is one of the really intriguing parts about them. And they do take care of kind of puppies as a group, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, they're incredible pack animals, that's for sure. Tracy, what are some other states who've done reintroduction doing? I know you and I talked about this last week when you were working on reporting. Wyoming basically treats wolves as predators, and 85% of the state you can kill a wolf on site without any license. We had a story about a man who caught a wolf, took it into a bar in Wyoming, and was only charged fined right now $250 for being in possession of a wild live wildlife. But what are some other states doing, Tracy, that Colorado might position itself after?
You know, unfortunately, I can't really speak to that much because I don't know how it works in, say, Washington and Oregon. I know Idaho has gotten a ton of bad, I don't know, I'm not going to say bad press, a ton of press in the past around its sort of, you know, hunger for killing wolves. Like, as far as I can remember, there have been some times where a lot of wolves have died in a short period. And you know, of course, like the people who love wolves don't like that. They hate it. They want it to stop. But yeah, I think Wyoming, that story out of Wyoming with the guy who chased this female wolf down. I don't care how people feel about wolves, you know, whether you love them or hate them, but to do something like that and then muzzle this female, bring her into a bar The pictures are just so disturbing of this poor animal. And it blows my mind how polarized people can be over something like that when it's just a basic human dignity and morals to not treat animals like that. It's just amazing. So that's getting a ton of attention. And I think there's people who want, you know, this guy charged with criminal charges on a federal level, I think. And it's just, it's really bad for just bad. It looks, you know, it's just really bad for the whole situation.
Yeah, it really doesn't help calm nerves or anything when you find out information like that, even though the guy was legal in killing it, but chasing it down, like you said, the decency of it is very disturbing. And it just makes an issue even more polarizing. Tracy, let's spin it forward. Let's end it with this. You know, we got this letter from Jeff Davis saying, you know, give us a little bit more time. When do you think we're going to hear from CPW? What are their next steps that they're kind of reviewing to get to some kind of formal policy or approach as far as dealing with depredation and wolves that kill and attack livestock?
Oh, you're quizzing me on a week when there's been so much going on and I've written so many stories. But I think Travis Duncan, who's the PIO for CPW, said end of June, around June and July, is when they might have drafted something or have made a move on this chronic depredation definition, and they'll be presenting that to the commission either around that time or sometime shortly thereafter. Yes, that's as I remember it, without going back into my emails and fact-checking myself at the moment. But I know something is coming up, and it's going to be happening this summer.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and the fact that I know you'll be covering those commission meetings as we hear it, keeping people updated, but certainly not an easy topic to cover, and you know, two very passionate sides. So I appreciate the delicate touch that you've been able to bring to the coverage with that, Tracy. Thanks for the time today and kind of helping us understand some of this. Want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to read more about our wolf coverage, you can check that out at coloradosun.com. Also, you can sign up for our weekly Outsider newsletter. Comes out every Thursday. Tracy was the author of it this week. We gave our friend Jason Blevins a week off for some holiday. So you can check that out at coloradosun.com/outsider. And a reminder, The Sun is a member of the Trust Project. You can check out our commitment to trusted journalism at coloradosun.com/ethics. Tracy Ross, make it a great week.
You too, Dave. Thank you so much. Survive the snow if it's coming your way.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The number of farms in Colorado has decreased, but the size of those properties is increasing. A national report looking at agriculture in the U.S. found that the number of farmers in Colorado dropped 7% from 2017 to 2022, but their ranches grew from 818 acres to 838 acres in that time. The report also found that 86% of farms with renewable energy reported using solar panels. Also, beginning farmers are younger than all farmers, with an average age of 49, and farmers younger than 35 make up 8% of all Colorado producers. A meeting room at Gunnison Valley Hospital is now a critical incident command center as healthcare officials sort through all the complications of the Highway 50 bridge closure. The hospital has come up with workarounds for nearly everything after setting up the incident command team the day the closure was announced. Oxygen, chemotherapy medications, blood products, linens, and drugs for the senior care center were all coming from the west on US 50. Lab specimens were going out in that direction. Patients needing radiation treatments, dialysis, and methadone traveled to Montrose regularly, some daily. Hospital officials say they are planning for a long closure. The arrangement for the heirs of the Sangre de Cristo land grant of 1844 has remained mostly in place, even as a line of wealthy men have purchased the southern Colorado land, but not always peacefully. Now, the battle line between the current billionaire landowner, who is the son of a Texas oil baron, and the descendants with a legal right to use the land is a fence around the 88,000-acre property. As both sides prepare for a trial this fall to decide the fate of the fence, tension is running high along the perimeter. In this week's Colorado Sunday feature, reporter Jennifer Brown looks into what's going on both sides of the fence. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
I'm Laura Wynot, Director of Membership at the Colorado Sun. I came to work at the Sun because quality, trustworthy journalism is important. As a reader and listener, I find the Sun to be a breath of fresh air. The journalists tell Colorado stories that keep me informed, entertained, and engaged. If you also trust the Sun for your news, join me as a member at coloradosun.com/join. Your support helps to bring you and other Coloradans the news you deserve. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you.